You're recording.
Thank you. Thank you all for joining us today. It is 8:33 on Wednesday, February 21st. We're going to call this meeting to order. Please note that we have our Attorney General, Mark Harris, joining us today. Make sure that you have muted or turned off your electronic devices. I just want to make a very special announcement real quick that it is Ms. Solomon's 75th birthday today, and we so appreciate that she's spending the entire day with us.
Thank you.
Okay, and then I want to read our mission statement. The Veterinary Board protects the health, safety, and welfare of the general public, as well as the welfare of animals, by enforcing the licensing standards prescribed by statute for the licensing and regulation of veterinarians, veterinary technicians, veterinary premises, and animal crematories. And then Dr. James, can you do the roll call for me?
Dr. Byrne? Ms. Krieger?
Here.
Ms. Frost?
Here.
Dr. James is here. Dr. Nosley?
Here.
Ms. Solomon?
Here.
Dr. Thompson? Absent. And Dr. Wright?
Here.
Great. All right, so we are going to start with our initial investigative reviews. The first one we're going to take is number 4-2433 in regards to Kathleen Schwimmer, DVM. Tracy, if you can read us the summary.
Yes, case 2433, the complainant is Janice Clay and Brian Majan. Respondent is Kathleen Schwimmer, DVM. On December 15th, 2022, Stitch, an 8-year-old male chihuahua, was presented to respondent for a dental procedure. The procedure was performed and the dog was discharged later that day. The following evening, the dog was presented to Blue Pearl on emergency for swelling of the head and coughing. Based on the exam and the dog's history of a dental procedure, tracheal laceration was suspected. On December 17th, 2022, the dog was transferred to Arizona Veterinary Emergency and Critical Care Center for evaluation and diagnostics. The dog underwent a CT scan. A tracheal tear was not identified. Treatment was provided for the dog's subacute emphysema, and he was discharged on December 19th. The dog was rechecked at AVEC on December 20th and December 24th. On December 26th, 2022, an endoscopy was performed and a tracheal tear was found. And during surgical exploration, repair of the tracheal tear, the dog rested. CPR was performed and was unsuccessful. The committee concluded that possible violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded that the board find ARS 3222-32-11 gross negligence, failure to select the appropriate endotracheal tube size and or supervise staff's placement of the endotracheal tube in the dog, which had an injurious result and led to the death of the dog. And the motion was approved with a vote of 3-0.
Okay, thank you, Tracy. We have both the respondent and the complainant here with us today, and you are Dr. Schwimmer and your attorney. If you would please just state your names for the record, and then I can give you up to 5 minutes to speak.
Dr. Kate Schwimmer.
Daniel Comedis for Dr. Kate Schwimmer.
Great. Thank you for being here. Go ahead.
First, I want to begin by expressing that the gravity of this case was not lost on myself or any of the staff at the veterinary clinic. As a veterinarian, we seek to do no harm, certainly not cause injury, and I cannot imagine what Stitch's family had to go through, and I sympathize greatly with them. I think about this case every day, every surgery I do, with every patient that's intubated. I want to discuss the procedures for intubation. Prior to this incident, the technician would select the ET tube size based on experience and the weight of the patient with a ET tube size reference posted for them to use during the procedure. They would then intubate the patient. If there was any concerns, they would have the doctor intubate for them. It's always been this procedure at this clinic. I've been practicing for almost 8 years, and any clinic that I have worked at or done internships, this was the procedure that was done. And in that 8 years, there have been no incidences or negative outcomes using the procedure of the technician to intubate. My understanding is that it's consistent with the national standards of veterinary care to allow the technician to intubate, especially ones with decades of experience. The the AHA 2023 tech utilization guidelines do say that they should be able to create a surgical plan, including surgery equipment, as well as the ABM list of required skills for technicians. They should be able to select and maintain anesthetic equipment, including endotracheal tubes. Thus, I do not believe that there is a deviation from the standard of care. The investigative committee concluded that the ET tube was the cause of Stitch's death. I do want to take into consideration some other factors that could have led to a different outcome for Stitch, including his underlying condition of collapsing trachea, other intubations that had occurred at the referring hospitals, and that surgical repair was not done right away when he presented to the emergency clinic. Although the procedure for technicians intubating is consistent with the national standards, myself and the staff and clinic have made changes since this incident. All techs were re-educated on how to select proper tube size and intubation. This occurred over a year ago, and being the lead surgeon at the clinic, I've done over 1,000 surgeries since. At a bare minimum, I select the ET tube size, if not directly intubating the patient myself. I believe this will decrease the risk of this occurring again. I hope that the board provides me a chance to prove that this will not happen under my supervision. As a veterinarian, I understand that we are responsible for all staff and patients under my care. I'm not shying away from that. I do believe that there was no deviation from the standard of care. It was simply a mistake. I have no history of prior discipline with the board, and myself and the clinic have made changes to ensure that this does not happen again.
Thank you. Did you have anything you wanted to share?
I'll keep it very brief. I think Dr. Schwimmer covered really everything we want to communicate here. Again, I can tell you from what I've heard that everyone is taking this extremely seriously. You can see from the changes that have been made. I think that we know that it can have bad results, even in the absence of negligence or absence of deviation from the standard of care. But when those harms do happen, you want professionals like Dr. Schwimmer to take that serious and make the appropriate changes, and I believe that's been done here. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you both. You may step back. So we have both the complainants here, one of them speaking, but if you both wanted to come forward, you're welcome to do so at this time. Thank you both for being here. Janice, it sounds like you're going to be the one speaking today. Okay, thank you. We're so sorry for the loss of Stitch. Take your time and go ahead.
Thank you for giving me this opportunity to address the board at this time. My name is Janice Lai, and this is my husband, Brian McGurr, and we're the parents of Prince Stitch Valentino Grimaldi, the first of his name, nickname Stitch. We trust that the board will fairly and objectively assess the recommendation from the investigative committee during this meeting, and we'd like to share our story with you. Stitch was a perfectly healthy and vivacious little 8-pound chihuahua who happened to be our best friend. And he was the first dog that was my very own. He was a vital member of our family, named after Disney's Lilo and Stitch. The most famous line in that movie is, "Ohana means family, and family means nobody gets left behind." When we got the phone call that Stitch had died, we vowed that we ensured that Stitch was not left behind or forgotten, and that is why we're here today. Right before his dental cleaning, we were planning our wedding. The next step was that I really wanted engagement photos with our dogs. And I had concerns that I brought up numerous times about his dental cleaning and recovery time, especially due to his size. I went out of my way to ask him numerous times if he would be healthy enough for this photo shoot and for our family coming into town for the holidays. They reassured me that he would be 100% by then. After Brian came home with Stitch from his procedure, I asked if they fawned over him, because normally that's what happened. He told me no, that the vet tech was apathetic, which concerned me and raised alarms in my system. A mother just knows. The next day, I had let them know that he was coughing. I was just told to just monitor it. He never recovered in time, and we never got our photo shoot. After a torturous and painful multi-week-long battle, which included taking Stitch back and forth to emergency care, taking time off work, staying up nights to deflate his JP drain and administer medications, he died on December 26th, the day after Christmas. Just 2 days after his death, while we're mourning with our family in town, we get an email from Dr. Sosno, the owner of the vet practice, the subject line, thinking of you. I couldn't even read it. I had to hand it to Brian. There was a clear and obvious undertone of the deflecting blame. Quotes include, "I'm very upset and confused as to exactly what happened. The doctor and me doesn't understand how this happened, and I'd like answers. We did too." Brian responded, he pointed out that not once was necropsy recommended. We urged her to conduct a thorough investigation with her staff and to please respect our privacy during this mourning period. The next morning, he got a 6-paragraph email. When we were ready, we reached out to Dr. Sosno with a few requests, the main one being to sit down with the team, herself, and a third-party mediator present to understand what had happened and how we can prevent this from happening to other families. Instead, we were passed off to their liability firm, Cincinnati Insurance, and were refused a discussion. Soon after, I actually learned from my nail tech nearby that they had clients who informed them that the vet acknowledged that they had to change procedures after a tragedy involving a chihuahua. This only exacerbated our emotional distress further. Through Cincinnati Insurance, we finally received the procedural medical records that we were previously denied. Within minutes, the two of us, without any vet training, identified the cause of death. This finding was later corroborated by independent veterinarians that we had sent the report to. We then heard from Cincinnati Insurance that Dr. Sosno was willing to sit with me, but not with Brian, and alone. I was not comfortable with this arrangement. I was the one who actually asked for a third-party mediator. Part of the grieving process is meeting with those responsible to enable a path to forgiveness. Through their cowardice, they did not provide Brian this opportunity, and in the end, myself. Furthermore, the hospital's own liability insurance recommend that we file this complaint with this board that you are reviewing today, which speaks volumes. How did this horrifying experience impact us? We were each diagnosed with depression and had to seek therapy. I still cry if I ever see a tan chihuahua, in which in Arizona, there are a lot of them. Our primary goal of this process to minimize the likelihood that no other family goes through this trauma. Deterrence is a powerful concept, and it's within your power to leverage it. Now that we are afforded an opportunity to share our side of the tragedy, we ask that you endorse the recommendation that was presented to you today. And I thank you, each of you, for all your time today.
Thank you so much. You may step back. And Dr. Nosley, you are the lead on this case.
Thank you. This very, very tragic case. First thing I want to focus on is this discussion about the tube size. And while I do believe the tube size was a factor, I think the main factor to me after seeing the necropsy report is that this was improper inflation of the cuff. That is what causes the necrosis and ultimately the tear, especially when you look at the location of the tear. It is exactly where the cuff is. Now the tube size, technically if the tube can be inserted, it could be considered not too large, unless you were physical force in putting this tube in, which would be extremely unusual. However, the tube size is a factor in that when it's very snug in there, there's not much margin for error in the inflation of the cuff. So it is a factor, but I believe the main problem was an improper inflation of the cuff. And so we get to the issue of who intubates. And there is certainly no statute that says veterinarians must do intubation, as was discussed. And so you're going to see a wide range in clinics regarding intubation. You'll have clinics where the techs do all the intubations virtually. You'll have other where it's a selective case by case. And there'll be other clinics where technicians do not intubate. Doctors only intubate. And some were CBTs, certified credential technicians do, but non-credential technicians don't. And I'm not sure, we were talking about some national standards here. I think that probably refers to CBTs, but I'm not sure on that. But it remains that technicians intubate in many clinics. And we obviously have an improper inflation of the cuff leading to stress and necrosis on the trachea and the tear, and then the ultimate passing of the patient. Can I ask Tracy who the responsible veterinarian for this practice is?
I believe it's Dr. Sossner. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And Dr. Sossner.
Okay. Well, since technicians can certainly intubate, and I think it's impractical to assume that a doctor in an operating theater can be standing over someone continuously checking tube sizes, that's not practical. So if a practice allows for technicians to do it, I think it's impractical to say that the doctor, the fault would lie with the doctor in that particular procedure theater. So in this case, I would disagree with the investigative committee, and I would make a motion. I would make a motion to dismiss with no violation and issue a letter of concern for the respondent to closely monitor the action of the technicians involved with her procedures.
Okay. We have a motion to dismiss. Is there a second?
I'll second. I just want to comment on it. I feel like, as in many of the cases that we see, this is a tragic case, and it was hard probably for communication on both sides, right? You're dealing with emotion and on both ends, right? But I think that a lot of why we're here is maybe potentially the explanation and the communication that happened after the fact. Nothing that I feel falls to a violation, but I feel like communication and whether these owners got what they needed to start the healing process was probably a lot of why we're here. Certainly no one intended it. You heard it from the veterinarian. Nobody intended for this to happen. This is certainly not something that was intentional or even without regard. I mean, I think they had good policies and practices in place, but I think it's the communication that led us to state this. And the loss of a pet. I mean, the loss of a pet is
like, can say that there's no violation with a letter of concern. I mean, we have a tracheal tear, an animal died.
What?
I don't see this as oh well. I mean, that's kind of what that is being dismissed as, and that doesn't sit well with me.
I agree with you, and I'm not finished.
Well, but in this case, I mean, with every case that a veterinarian has, that's your patient, right? So as a veterinarian practicing in the practice, you work with these team members. You are ultimately responsible for the actions that happen. And even when something is not intentional, it doesn't mean that there wasn't a violation. And so we oftentimes talk in this very space and say, gosh, we wish we would have known what would have happened. Like, if there was a necropsy, maybe we would have had some answers. Well, in this case, there was a necropsy, and we do have answers. And absolutely, I believe, you know, this veterinarian that is devastating. As a veterinarian, your job is to do no harm. Your job is to do best by your patients, right? And for the people that trust you with their care and all of that. So yes, this was not intentional. You know, do we hope to never see this again? Absolutely. But I don't think that means that there is no violation. And again, I hear where you're going with this, which
maybe that's a part of it too. I just don't think this is part where it's like, well, you know, letter of concern for you and then, you know, move on to the second piece. I think there's, if there are two pieces, I still think that this is one piece for this violation.
The veterinarian is ultimately responsible for their surgical procedures, and if we're tied up somewhere else, we're gonna have to trust that this person's doing something the right way, and if they're not, we have to take responsibility for that.
I just don't know how, as a veterinarian, that's not the responsible vet for the practice. Because a responsible vet would be responsible for making sure their technicians are trained, making sure that all the technicians know the protocols, right?
Yes and no, because again, as a veterinarian, working with technicians, I've seen veterinarians work in practices where they weren't comfortable. Well, then don't work in that practice. Don't say, oh, well, this is on the premise license holder, right? So if you're not working with people that aren't trained, then it's your job to advocate not only for your patient, which you should do first, right, but also for yourself professionally. And if you're like, this person is not trained to do this thing.
Right, and if you notice that, obviously, you take ownership and you do it. I don't think that's what happened in this case. I don't think this veterinarian said this technician isn't trained and I shouldn't have let her do it. I think this is an established technician that they felt like had done this multiple times and could do this. There was no way of her to have forethought to be like, oh, she's going to screw this one up. I don't know
exactly
how she would have been able to do that. And yes, I understand she's responsible for what happens, but this was out of her control. Unless she's gonna physically intubate that dog herself, even if she had watched the technician do it, I don't know that she would have detected that there was something done wrong, even if she had watched it, because a lot of that is feeling the cup.
But the same thing, if
right?
the premise license holder watched her do that, they couldn't have known. Again, in this case, this dog was under the medical care of that veterinarian.
Yeah,
but the
I don't think we can say everything is responsibility of the premise license.
No, I don't either.
The veterinarian has to take responsibility of their own cases.
I don't either, but I think this is one that we get into a lot, which is this veterinarian didn't do anything outside the norm. Technicians intubate every day. This is an established technician that intubated this dog. She couldn't have, even just watching, known that this was done wrong. She couldn't have, like, I just don't see how she could have even possibly prevented this. In which case,
it just falls on her
and that sucks. But that's not going to change anything. And what the owners were saying is they wanted to change it so that this doesn't happen to other people. That's not going to change anything. There's nothing that could change that would make it better.
But we should be looking at the previous records and seeing, okay, there's a drastic change in size of the ET tube, and why was this done? It was 5.5 last time. This dog has not gained.
So every surgery you do, you check what tube was used last time to see if
the tube was the same.
No, I know the history of the animal, but to check the tube size on every single surgery that goes under.
I checked the previous drugs that were used to make sure there was nothing weird that happened.
I checked tube size, but okay. Well, we have a motion.
So.
Okay. So we have a motion and a second to dismiss case 2433 and issue a letter of concern. All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed?
Nay.
Nay.
Okay, so we're tied. 3-3. Okay, so we need
further discussion or another motion.
Another motion or further.
Just to clarify, if there's a tie, the motion fails, correct?
Mm-hmm. That is correct.
Right.
So I would yield to other members on the board to make another motion.
So, like I said, I guess the question is, I mean, is this a negligence thing? I don't think this is a malpractice. Again, I don't think this was there, but is there a gross negligence issue going on here? So I don't know what your thoughts are on that. Or any other potential issues, but. Or we could just go to an informal so we can discuss it more and ask more questions.
Second.
So yeah, I'll make the motion to move this to an informal further discussion.
What are we looking to get out of the informal? Do you guys have questions that's gonna change?
Yeah, that's where I'm at. I'm not really sure that.
Well, I think there's more discussion going on here, and when you have a negligence issue, I always think that there's a little better discussion that can be had in regards to those.
I just don't know that we're going to get anything out of an informal. I mean, we know what the diagnosis was, we know what happened, we know who did it, we know, like, I think we're at a standstill because we're divided and we don't necessarily agree, but I don't think going to an informal, and except for that maybe there's different board members here, but I don't necessarily think that's gonna change the facts at hand.
I think whatever additional information the board can gain, board members can gain from an informal is definitely worthwhile as we have a tie vote.
Yeah.
I think it just drags it out for the veterinarian and the owner who are trying to heal.
Okay, so we have a motion. Did we hear a second? We do, from Dr., or from Ms. Holman?
Yeah, Ms. Holman.
To move to an informal. So all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Nay. Sorry.
I'll make a motion to find, to agree with the investigative committee and find ARS 3222-3211 gross negligence failure to select the appropriate endotracheal tube size and or supervised placement of the endotracheal tube, which had injurious result and led to the death of Stitch.
Second.
Okay, so we have a...
Are you thinking about consent agreement then?
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. Again, with a consent agreement with keeping in mind that if it isn't signed within the 30 days, that we would go to an informal. Again, the conversation that, you know, has been had isn't that we know what happened. Nobody is disputing that. Absolutely, there were opportunities for communication to be better. Hopefully there was things learned there in this type of situation, how valuable communication is. But there, nobody, none of us, and nobody that we heard from today is disputing what happened. So again, that's why I make that motion.
Just to clarify this, Adam, did that include improper inflation of the cuff?
Again, it's the tube size and placement. So okay. I mean, ultimately, okay. When you inflate the cuff, tube size does have to do with that, because obviously the larger the tube, the less the cuff needs to be inflated, and there are proper procedures and measures.
And ultimately, cuffs aren't there to kind of make up for dead space. It's there's another purpose to them, whereas a lot of times they're used incorrectly.
Okay.
Yeah, we don't place a tiny tube and then blow it up to make up for the room. You do want an appropriate size, so you don't really need the cuff and
The cuffs really shouldn't be used like they're used.
Thank you.
Okay, so now we have a motion.
And a second.
And a second. Find a violation. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Nay.
Okay, motion passes.
Do you want to accept the findings of fact and conclusions of law on that?
Okay, we're going to do a consent agreement. Okay.
I think Nikki already did the consent agreement, so it's just the findings of fact and conclusions of law.
Right.
I'm
going
to adopt the investigative committee's findings of fact and conclusions of law. And then is there any prior disciplinary history?
Probably needs to be somebody that voted yes.
Okay.
To make that motion. In other words, we're just sitting here waiting.
I move that we adopt the report's proposed findings of fact as our findings of fact.
And conclusions of law.
Pardon?
Want to just include the conclusions of law too?
Okay, I can combine them in one motion. And the report's conclusions of law as our conclusions of law.
Thank you.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Okay. Motion passes. You want to give us the priors?
In 2018, it looks like there was a letter of concern. There was a case that was dismissed but issued a letter of concern regarding monitoring anesthesia.
Okay.
I would move we offer a CA, unless you're ready to, Ms. Frost?
All right, go ahead.
Okay. We offer a consent agreement with 2 years probation and continuing education of 4 hours on anesthesia, induction, and monitoring. And since this is, the other one was a letter of concern, no penalty. And if not signed within 30 days, goes to informal.
So what I'm hearing is just a consent agreement for continuing education, and then she'd have 2 years.
And probation.
Right, and she'd have 2 years in which to complete it.
Correct.
And then it would be pre-approved and all
standard. Pre-approve any plan, yes, continuing education, make sure it complies with the consent agreement.
Why do we need 2 years for 4 hours?
Yeah, let's do 1 year probation.
Okay. 1 year, okay, I'll go with that. I'll amend my motion to 1 year and 4 hours.
And I agree with that. Yeah, as I said, I don't think this was malicious. I think this was a mistake, and unfortunately mistakes happen in medicine, but we've got to take responsibility for those and deal with it. Going back to what Dr. Nosley was saying, again, the doctor did not intubate here, so I would hope that she would take this continuing education and train the rest of the staff and help with their training also. Because, like I said, the doctor may know what's going on, but it sounds like the staff may not, or there's some issues going on there.
Is there a second?
Second. Sorry, I
just
thought you said that.
Oh, sorry. I'm getting out of order.
So a motion and a second for the consent agreement. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
I do have one question on this case before we move on. Is the technician involved here a certified technician?
No.
No.
So I would like to look at the responsible veterinarian in this case. It's apparent to me there was poor training, poor understanding of proper technique by the technical staff, or no continuing training or monitoring, reminders, etc. in this case. And the actions of a staff member resulted in the death of the patient. So I would make a motion to open a case against Dr. Laura Susnow as the responsible veterinarian for failing to have the necessary training in place at the time of the incident.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to open a case against Dr. Susnow. There's no further discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Okay, thank you all for being here today. I know this was a really hard case, so thank you.
Thank you. And to the owner, sorry for your loss.
All right, moving on, we are now on number 5, which is 2435 in regards to Kelly Isle DVM. Tracy, if you can read the summary.
I'm going to have Annalise read the summary.
Okay, that's good.
I'm learning. Case 2435, the complaint, Alchemy claimant and respondent is Kelly Isle DVM. On June 5th, 2023, Pickles, a 6-year-old female domestic short haired cat, was presented to the respondent for a spay procedure. The procedure was performed and the cat was discharged later that day. On June 11th, 2023, the cat was presented to an emergency facility due to lethargy and frequent trips to the litter box. Diagnostics revealed the cat had a septic abdomen. Hospitalization and surgery were recommended. Complainant elected to immediately euthanize the cat. Necropsy report revealed the cat's septic abdomen was likely due to surgical contamination. The committee recommended that there was no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act. It was moved and seconded, and it was, the vote was 3-0.
Oh, to
dismiss with no violation.
Thank you, Annalise. And in this case, so we have the complainant here, and we have Mr. Stoll.
Monitoring only. Thank
monitoring.
You.
Can we make it noted for the record that Dr. James is?
Oh yes, thank you. Dr. James is recused on this item. Okay, so we will have the complainant, Tara Pollard, come forward if you'd like to speak. My understanding is you are the mother of the complainant, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for being here today. I can give you up to 5 minutes to address the board. Just please state your name for the record again.
Tara Poller.
Thank you. Take your time. I apologize.
No, that's okay. That is okay. You just take a minute.
Take a deep breath.
Let us know when you're ready, okay?
I she was a perfectly healthy cat. I trust this facility. And I understand, I'm in the medical field. I understand how procedures go. I understand that with any surgery, there's risk. Upon numerous calls to them, and she took like a turn for the worse, like that, taking her to the emergency vet upon thousands of dollars to have her tested to see what was going on. They recommended a surgery. They did not think she would make it out, and that's when they discovered she was in septic shock and that there was really no coming back from that. They suggested the necropsy, and I'm so happy that we did that because we had answers. I don't care if it's the vet, I don't care if it's medical procedures with humans, knowing that there was cross-contamination, at the end of the day, the doctor is ultimately responsible for the care of their patients. That doesn't sit well with me, because they knew the day after we had Pickles euthanized that she passed away. My Acme had went in. You guys have a letter that she wrote. I don't have to go into details, or it's very specific in everything that happened that week. Alchemy went in the day after we had Pickles euthanized, let the facility know. We did not hear anything back from the facility for a month. She adamantly denied cross-contamination, which I think is, she basically said that the pathologist who did the testing for the necropsy was wrong. Me being a dental assistant and in the dental field, at the end of the day, it is our job to make sure our patients don't have that cross-contamination. So I look at pathologists, doctors to a high standard, and I take that consideration. So for Pickles to have the cross-contamination during a surgery, doctor saying the pathologist is wrong, we did reach out to the emergency vet. They contacted the pathologist to see if there was any more testing that could be done. They said no, it stuck by their findings. And so now here we are. Dr. Ale, I think I'm saying that wrong, but she denied any wrongdoing. And I just would like you guys to reconsider the dismissal of however she needs to be held accountable, because at the end of the day, her and the facility are accountable. We at the end of the day lost a very special family member, and that is hard. So I'd just like you to reconsider.
Thank you. We're so sorry for the loss of Pickles.
Thank you.
Okay, and Dr. Wright, you are the lead on this one.
Yes. So I'm going through and reading this. Am I able to ask a question about contact with the clinic after this day? I know we're not informal, but I don't know if I could just ask a quick question about that. Or
I think so, sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Would you like to come up real quick? I just have a question for you. And we can't get into too much information because it's not informal, but I just had a quick clarifying question.
Of course.
So the spay occurred on the 5th of June?
Correct.
After that spay, did you ever call up and speak with the clinic again about Pickles?
Yes, because we had concerns throughout the week. Pickles would, and I know she would, she was 7 years old, obviously maybe getting back to used to, just being normal. I understand that, it was a surgery. She would show signs of improvement. She'd drink water. She was eating a little bit, and she kind of revert back. So at that point, we did reach out to the facility. We did call. They said to keep encouraging, and I might even have the text message, because they oftentimes don't answer their phones. So it was a lot of messages were through text. So they said, okay, we'll try wet food, wet tuna, things like that to encourage her eating. I did that. She showed signs of a little bit of improvement, but then within 24 hours, it was like that. It was almost instant, the change.
Did they ever tell you to bring pickles back in?
They were not adamant on it. They said, well, if she doesn't show any more signs of improving, then bring her in, we'll see her. And at that point, she had started eating more because it was wet food. And it was, I assume it was something different. She was sometimes like that, so it's not, that wasn't like a concern to me. Sometimes she did like wet food, sometimes she didn't. So for her to eat it wasn't out of the norm.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Okay, so that answers some questions there. Again, we don't have, she said she might have the text for them, but I don't have anything documented in the medical record about speaking with this owner after the fact. So that's a little concerning for me too, and we're gonna go with that. We were commenting over our text message, and she said that, again, this is one-sided testimony right now, but we don't answer the phone very often. And during the inspection, I noticed there was no referral address for emergency on the voicemail. So I just have a couple of concerns about kind of what's going on with all that and kind of what your thoughts are here. Unfortunately, I mean, an infection, sepsis, infections can happen after surgery. I mean, it's not something anybody wants. We don't go for that. There was an inspection that was done and nothing that would say, oh yes, we had packs that were unsterilized or something like that. So I can't say there was actually any fault there. Unfortunately, sometimes infections happen, and it's just an accident thing. But there are just kind of a couple concerns in regards to, again, were we kind of dismissed after the fact? Should the actual clinic have been taking care of this case from day one when we were having issues and coming in for a recheck? And again, this ended up being an emergency issue, and there was no emergency phone number on the voicemail, so it's kind of leaving the clients to deal with things on their own. So definitely would like some opinions on kind of where to go with this, but there's more going on.
Yes.
That this kind of opened up
yes.
more questions.
Yes, Madam Chair, if I may. Other than the possible other open wounds, which I didn't see any noted in the medical record, I know that things like pneumonia or respiratory infections can go to sepsis, which wasn't noted as existing in the record either. So as a layperson, I'm asking the professionals on the board, are there other possible sources?
Yeah, that was my focus in this case, and I focused on that necropsy report, and particularly the findings of the pathologist regarding the uterine stone. There was no evidence of any abnormal tissue at the ovarian stones, but at the uterine stone is where the pathology occurred. And in that area, there was a myriads of white cells and bacteria, which turned out to be strep, which is one of the bacteria you could see in Pyometra. So to me, I think that was very telling as to a very likely possibility of where this strep came from, meaning the uterus. When a spay is done, the uterine body is ligated at the level of the cervix or just proximal to that, and then the uterine body is severed. If there is bacteria in that uterus, considering it is strep, and the pathologist found what is basically the appearance of an abscess at that particular location, would be a very likely source, and I believe that was discussed by the pathologist. It's not a case of when you have, this is a six-year-old cat, and the respondent in her record said this was a very abnormal uterus, which you can certainly see in a six-year-old cat. It's had many heat cycles and pregnancies or whatever, you can see have a very enlarged, abnormal appearing uterus, and that's what she described. So my concern in it, older cats can have metritis or endometritis. It's not just normal uterus to pyometra. We can consider endometritis and metritis as a precursor to pyometra. But pyometra we all recognize as an overt infection, but endometritis and metritis is an infection also, of the depending on the layer of the uterus we're talking about. So when you sever that uterine body, if there's infection there, that could very likely have been the source, the septic peritonitis. So my concern is that antibiotics were not used in this case that I found anywhere in the record. I didn't find perioperative antibiotics nor any antibiotics dispensed. And that is a very controversial subject. There are surgeons that absolutely, if we don't have a indication, a culture, cytology, something, we're not using antibiotics. There are other veterinarians that use antibiotics in every surgery, cat neuter, yeah, everything. Okay, so in this case, because the respondent said this was an abnormal uterus, I would have liked to have seen a, at least give antibiotics or a closer examination of that uterus, and you open these things up and it, you can tell. That looks like mucopurulent material in here. I'm gonna give some antibiotics. Antibiotics in this case, we don't have a septic peritonitis. Unless we have resistance, yeah, or we're not broad spectrum, yeah, enough, or all those things. So that's what I focused on. It was, in this particular case, no antibiotic therapy.
And I think, I mean, that's a good argument. I mean, blood work was done. There was no high white cell count or anything that indicates an actual infection. So yeah, it's kind of one of those questionable things. But I definitely understand your argument, and you kind of convinced me on that too. We had the cat that was abnormally urinating. Again, is that going to be... Yeah, that was in there. So I mean, is that again tied in with something going on there? So maybe we could have followed up more. Your analysis wasn't done, mm-hmm, to see if anything there. Mm-hmm. So, but again, I don't routinely run your analyses on spays and neuters anyway. But I mean, blood work was helpful. So, yeah, there's definitely that's a good argument there. Because the blood, or if we didn't have blood work, I would kind of be leaning more towards that. Because we have blood, right, that's normal, it's like, well, maybe we just looked at the wrong thing.
Yeah.
But again, kind of going back to the client calling afterwards saying, hey, we're not normal, if the veterinarian would have recognized, oh, that uterus looked weird, maybe I should follow up on this more, that again supports you more. So like I said, I think there was definitely kind of some ball drop going on here, and it's just kind of what level this is.
Sometimes when you have, for lack of a better term, a slow burn infection, mm-hmm, that's isolated to the uterus, there are not going to be any, yeah, CBC changes.
No, it's very true. Especially because cats are weird in general.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so I mean, there's definitely, I think, more of an issue going on here. Again, do we have enough information, or again, do we look at an informal to kind of discuss more with the veterinarian what their thought process was here?
It's pretty complete what we have. I understand that you may have questions, but I think the questions are more for the,
yeah, it was like this is singing up here.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Okay.
I mean, is this a professionally acceptable procedures in your mind?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. So based on that, based on the discussion, I would say I make a motion to find a violation of ARS 3222-3212 in relation to AACR 311-5011. The veterinarian shall show respect to the veterinary or to the owner of the animal whom the medical services are being provided through professionally accepted procedures for missing an infection at the time of surgery.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to find a violation. Is there any further discussion? Okay. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes.
So I guess we can just kind of move forward on
consent agreement.
Yeah. Offer a consent agreement to be signed within 30 days or refer to remand to an informal.
So do you want to, I guess we should consider a motion with respect to adopting the findings set forth in the investigative report as they relate to the violation.
I thought the investigative committee found nothing, though. Or did they?
Right.
Well, findings of fact.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Accept their findings of fact.
Thank you.
Did you want to add anything to those findings?
That's why I was going to open that up again real quick and see, because I think we do need to add in some information. Dr. Mousley said, if you want to concisely say that. But
yeah.
If you want me to try, or you want to try?
You have to go.
All right. So let me see real quick right here where we can have that in, because I think everything else on the findings of fact was good. So I make a motion to accept the findings of fact as our findings of fact, adding in information regarding the abnormal uterus and likely infection going on at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds good.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second to accept the findings of fact. All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Or as amended. Thank you.
Yeah.
Opposed? Motion passes.
And our conclusions of law, because
You stated that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that already.
I make a motion to accept the conclusions of law as stated previously in the violations.
I'm just showing anomalies on previous
stuff. For priors, in 2003, there was a consent agreement for failure to change address in a timely fashion, and there was a civil penalty.
That was the only one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, so I would offer, like I said, a consent agreement for the probation of 1 year, 4 hours in pedometer or abnormal spay procedures, and I don't know about a civil violation at this point. I'd say no civil violation.
Okay.
Second.
Motion and a second, 4 hours of continuing education. Is there any further discussion? Okay.
And that was CE in pyometra as or abnormal spay procedures.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Okay. Finished with that one. Thank you for being here.
And then can we direct staff? We're going to follow up on the inspection again with those violations. Is that correct? Or because again,
it was discussed last meeting. There's going to be a drop in. We're told to re-inspect them in here.
Okay. Beautiful. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you all so much, by the way.
Yes,
thank you. I appreciate it.